fellow time traveler, and welcome to Rock and Roll Flashback Podcasts.
Welcome to Rock and Roll Flashback. I'm Bill Price.
And I'm Jumpin' John McDermott. And we'll be looking back at some of rock and roll's greatest artists, songs, and stories. Music has the mysterious power to trigger deep emotions and reawaken memories. In the My Musical Memories series here on the Rock and Roll Flashback Podcast, I will explore the various ways that music was an integral part of my life with my best friend and soulmate, Sally. In today's podcast,
1971, Hello, My Love,
My Musical Memories Part 1, abbreviated MMM1, I will discuss my meeting Sally Layman in 1971, the musical highlights of that year, and how that music influenced Sally and me.
John, why don't you briefly tell the listeners about how you first happened to meet Sally?
Sure, Bill. My fortunes and my life positively changed on October 16th, 1971. At that time, I was in my junior year at Penn State University, located in Center County, Pennsylvania. That fateful Saturday night, I met another Penn State student named Sally Layman at an off-campus party in nearby Patton Township. I was immediately entranced and captivated by her sweet personality. Sally would eventually become my confidant, my constant companion, my wife, and the mother of our two daughters. For the better part of 50 years, I was immersed in her love and she in mine. In the eyes of relatives, friends, and acquaintances, we were the team of Sally and John. Sally truly was my once-in-a-lifetime gift, and I am so fortunate that she accepted me into her life. So 1971 was certainly a meaningful year in my life, and October 16th, 1971 turned out to be the best day of my life.
Didn't Apple TV run a series a couple of years ago about the importance of the year 1971 in the world of music?
Yes, it was called 1971, The Year That Music Changed Everything. That was the title of a 2021 Apple TV 8-part series, 1971, The Year That Music Changed Everything. While I don't remember the year 1971 to be that dramatic, it was nevertheless an eventful year of transition in rock and roll music. Paul McCartney had filed suit for the dissolution of the Beatles' contractual partnership on the last day of 1970. Then in 1971, ex-Beatles McCartney and Ringo Starr both had top five hits, and ex-Beatle George Harrison organized the concert for Bangladesh. Jim Morrison tragically died in France of a drug overdose in July, and sadly, Duane Allman died in an October motorcycle accident. In the UK, the first Glastonbury Festival was held in 1971. That year, Bill Graham closed his Fillmore East and West concert venues. Singer-songwriters were popular in 1971, with Carole King, Gordon Lightfoot, Bill Withers, and John Denver having top 10 hits. 1971 also saw the formation of some major rock bands and performers: Steely Dan, The Eagles, Mahavishnu Orchestra, Foghat, Loggins and Messina, Sister Sledge, and so on.
Prior to the 1960s, long playing album content was primarily devoted to classical, big band, and jazz recordings. By 1971, the way in which people were accessing and playing rock and roll music had really evolved. The era of LPs consisting of merely one A-side hit single, combined with nine or so other throwaway B-sides, was fading away. Why buy a hit single on a 45 when you could purchase an entire album with several excellent tunes? Record buyers were certainly purchasing more 33 RPM rock albums, and mono recordings were phasing out. Reinforcing this trend, by the end of the 1960s, FM stations with better quality sound were flourishing. The preferred radio listening format was morphing from hearing singles of 3 minutes or less on AM radio to hearing extended play album cuts on FM radio.
So true. As a teenager growing up in the 1960s, we mostly listened to our rock and roll on AM radio and played our mono 45 RPM vinyl rock and roll records on record players and turntables. Following the model perfected by groups like the Beatles and the Moody Blues, by the late 1960s, more and more recording artists were doing fewer covers and were writing and recording their own tunes. The quality and content of long-playing rock albums showed vast improvement. Even the album covers were becoming more creative, with imaginative photos and vibrant artwork. More and more rock LPs consisted of multiple hits and were being recorded in stereo. Sally and I quickly discovered that one of the many things we had in common was our love of music, and in particular, rock and roll. When we met in 1971, there were no music CDs, no Napster, no iTunes, and no Spotify. At that time, cassette and 8-track recordings by rock musicians were just being developed, and reel-to-reel magnetic tape players were bulky and expensive. So vinyl was still king in 1971. By 1971, Sally and I were both well into vinyl album collections and were purchasing fewer and fewer singles. Also, back in October 1971, neither Sally nor I owned a television. In fact, we didn't purchase our first black and white TV until December 1973. So many evenings in our dorm rooms or apartments were spent listening to FM radio or to rock and roll albums, and maybe doing other things as well. Maybe we were studying.
Or doing something else? So what was being played and purchased by the consuming public in October 1971?
Well, looking back, I am stunned at how few of the top 40 singles were songs I would desire to listen to, let alone even recognize. Here are the Billboard Hot 100's top 10 singles in the U.S. for the week ending October 16th, 1971, the week that I met Sally. Number 10, Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves by Cher. Number 9, Sweet City Woman by the Stampeders. Number 8, If You Really Love Me by Stevie Wonder. Number 7, Uncle Albert Admiral Halsey by Paul and Linda McCartney. Number 6, Do You Know What I Mean by Lee Michaels. Number 5, Go Away Little Girl by Donny Osmond. Number 4, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down by Joan Baez. Number 3, Yo-Yo by the Osmonds. Number 2, Superstar, backed with Bless the Beasts and Children by the Carpenters. And number 1 was Maggie May, backed with Reason to Believe by Rod Stewart.
Did you have any of those particular top 10 tunes in your personal record collection?
Well, actually, on October 16th, I did own a copy of Paul McCartney's Ram album and of Rod Stewart's Every Picture Tells a Story album. I don't know how you listeners feel about these top 10 songs, but the only two of interest to me back then were Uncle Albert Admiral Halsey and Maggie May, both of which reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
I believe that the only other two in that list that would have even reached number one were Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves and Go Away, Little Girl.
Yes, you were correct. Not surprisingly, the Every Picture Tells a Story album, and in particular the song Maggie May, were being played multiple times at the October 16th party where I met Sally. In fact, when Sally's sister Linda came to visit her a month later, Maggie May was still a popular tune to play at off-campus parties.
You've mentioned that there were a lot of excellent music available on LPs in 1971. Can you give us some examples?
I sure can. Here are just a few of the many amazing albums that were released in 1971. Four-Way Street by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Aqualung by Jethro Tull. At Fillmore East by the Allman Brothers Band. Chicago 3 by Chicago. Every Good Boy Deserves Favor by the Moody Blues. Every Picture Tells a Story by Rod Stewart. Fragile by Yes. Harmony by Three Dog Night. Imagine by John Lennon. L.A. Woman by The Doors. Led Zeppelin 4 by Led Zeppelin. Love It to Death by Alice Cooper. Madman Across the Water by Elton John. Master of Reality by Black Sabbath. Pearl by Janis Joplin. Pictures at an Exhibition by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Ram by Paul and Linda McCartney. Santana 3 by Santana. Shaft by Isaac Hayes. Sticky Fingers by the Rolling Stones. Summer Side of Life by Gordon Lightfoot. Tapestry by Carole King. Tarkus by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. The Concert for Bangladesh by George Harrison and Friends. The Yes Album by Yes. There's a Riot Going On by Sly and the Family Stone. Thirds by James Gang. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. Who's Next by The Who.
What sort of rock and roll music were you and Sally listening to back then?
Well, by October 1971, Sally and I were both listening to a broad range of pop and rock and roll music. Groups like The Beatles, The Dave Clark Five, Chicago, Santana, Three Dog Night, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and countless other musical acts. Coming together in the early 1970s, we definitely influenced and broadened each other's musical horizons. I quickly absorbed Sally's interest in artists like The Guess Who, Sly and the Family Stone, The Classics Four, The Fifth Dimension, Carly Simon, and Françoise Hardy. And I influenced Sally's taste with artists like Gordon Lightfoot, The Moody Blues, Led Zeppelin, Cream, Jimi Hendrix, and Jethro Tull.
Do you have any favorites from the 1971 released albums?
Of the many vinyl LPs in Sally and my personal 1971 collections, here are seven of my favorite albums that were released in 1971. I list them in alphabetical order, but not necessarily in preferential order. Aqualung by Jethro Tull. That was a soundbite of the first 20 seconds of Aqualung. Every Good Boy Deserves Favor by the Moody Blues. That was a soundbite of the first 20 seconds of The Story in Your Eyes. L.A. Woman by The Doors.
I want to tell you about Texas radio and the Big Beat. Comes out of the Virginia swamps, cool and slow, but
that was a soundbite of the first 20 seconds of The Wasp, Texas Radio and the Big Beat. Led Zeppelin 4 by Led Zeppelin. That was a soundbite of the first 20 seconds of When the Levee Breaks. Sticky Fingers by the Rolling Stones. That was a soundbite of the first 20 seconds of Bitch. Tapestry by Carole King.
Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something wrong here, there can be no denying. One of us is changing.
That was a soundbite of the first 20 seconds of It's Too Late. The Yes Album by Yes. That was a soundbite of the first 20 seconds of Yours Is No Disgrace.
Can you share with the audience a bit more detail about each of those seven albums?
Certainly. Aqualung was released in quadraphonic sound and peaked at number 7 on the U.S. Billboard 200 album chart. With songs like Aqualung, Hymn 43, and Locomotive Breath, the album would go on to sell over 7 million copies and would be Jethro Tull's best-selling album. When I was a 6-year-old piano student, my teacher taught me the mnemonic for the lines of the treble clef, E, G, B, D, F, as every good boy deserves fudge. The Brits apparently didn't have the same sweet tooth.
Well, I learned a slightly different mnemonic. Every good boy does fine.
Yes, I've heard that one also. At any rate, those 5 notes are heard on piano during the opening song Procession in the Moody Blues album Every Good Boy Deserves Favor. This album is another example of the Moody's mixture of thoughtful, introspective lyrics and lush, pleasant harmonies. The LP was number 2 on the U.S. Billboard 200 album chart for 3 weeks and reached number 1 on the British album chart. It produced the single, The Story in Your Eyes, which reached number 23 on the Billboard singles chart. L.A. Woman is the 6th studio album by The Doors, and it peaked at number 9 on the U.S. Billboard 200 album chart. It is the last Doors LP to feature lead singer Jim Morrison during his lifetime, as Morrison died exactly 2 months and 2 weeks following the album's release. The band returned to their blues rock roots with songs like Love Her Madly, L.A. Woman, and Riders on the Storm. Led Zeppelin IV is considered by many to be one of the greatest classic rock albums ever produced. It was officially untitled upon release, and it contains popular songs like Black Dog, Rock and Roll, and Stairway to Heaven. The album would become Led Zeppelin's best-selling album, selling over 37 million copies worldwide, and it reached number 1 in the UK and number 2 in the US album chart. In late 1971, I snuck an underage Sally Lehman into State College's The Brewery Bar. I can't recall how she got in, but I think Sally's roommate, Barb, may have known the bar's bouncer. Anyway, the brewery had a small dance floor, and I remember dancing with Sally while a cover band played the Stones song Brown Sugar. The Sticky Fingers LP reached number 1 in both the UK and US. It was the first album released on the Rolling Stones' new label, Rolling Stones Records, with its now famous Tongue and Lips logo. Sticky Fingers was their first studio album without Brian Jones, and with songs like Brown Sugar, Wild Horses, and Bitch, is considered one of the Stones' best albums. Tapestry is the second studio album by singer-songwriter Carole King. It won 4 Grammy Awards, Album of the Year, Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Best Pop Vocal Performance Female. The lead singles from the album, It's Too Late and I Feel the Earth Move, spent 5 weeks at number one on both the Billboard Hot 100 and Easy Listening charts. The Tapestry LP has sold an estimated 30 million copies worldwide, making it one of the best-selling albums of all time. The Yes album is the third studio album by English progressive rock band Yes. All of the band members contributed ideas in the tracks Yours Is No Disgrace, Starship Trooper, and I've Seen All Good People were extended in length, allowing their musical ideas to develop. The album was a critical success and a major commercial breakthrough for Yes, who had been at risk of being dropped by Atlantic Records due to the commercial failures of their first two albums. It reached number 40 in the U.S. and number 4 in the U.K.
I have reminded you that the song Long Tall Sally is unique, in that it is a rare song that mentions both a Sally and a John in the lyrics. Think about these lyrics. Well, Long Tall Sally, she's built for speed. She's got everything that Uncle John need. Oh, baby, yeah, baby, woo, woo, baby. Having me some fun tonight, yeah. Perhaps Richard Penniman anticipated that you would one day connect with Sally Layman.
Sure. I would agree that Little Richard was very prophetic. The French have an expression called raison d'être, which roughly translates to reason or justification for existence or purpose or reason for living. Sally Layman McDermott was my raison d'être, the story of my life revolves around the wonderful 50-year relationship that I had with the true love of my life, Sally Layman McDermott. All of the podcasts in the My Musical Memories series are dedicated to her memory. This has been Rock and Roll Flashback, where in today's podcast,
1971, Hello, My Love,
My Musical Memories Part 1, I discussed meeting Sally Layman, the musical highlights of the year 1971, and how that music influenced Sally and me. Be sure to watch for future episodes of My Musical Memories, only on Rock and Roll Flashback Podcasts. So for now, I'm Jumpin' John McDermott.
And I'm Bill Price, and until next time,
rock on, rock on, rock on, rock on.
On a memory, I was thinking about you.
Gotta get back to the Radio Shack.